your question about how do you deal with all this stuff, the answer is, just like anything else, a good counselor, more often than not, the most important thing they can do is shut up and listen.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. We tell the stories of people who are defining the future of work. Our guests walk the tightrope, away from meaningless toil and towards work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. It is week 7 of sheltering in place. It is also the last week of April 2020. Those of us who got a paycheck this week are doing the best that we can to use our time and resources well. Others of us who were furloughed from our jobs may be struggling, wondering what new shockwaves will hit us next. Working or not, the anxieties that we feel about money and work are deep enough to keep us up at night. The process of managing personal financial resources is a lifelong endeavor, but the current COVID-19 crisis makes that endeavor mission critical. And if we are suddenly out of work, we need to think carefully about our financial security and future work opportunities. This week, we reached out to Stephen Oriel of Evergreen Life Partners to probe our new realities. He is a certified financial planner who works with a wide variety of clients seeking lifetime financial security. Steve is also an adjunct professor of business at the University of the District of Columbia, where he challenges his students to map their career and life plans with value clarity. Our discussion was both timely and meaningful. We spoke with Steve Oriel earlier this week on Zoom. Stephen Oriel, welcome to the Tightrope.
Thank you, Dan.
You are founder and principal of Evergreen Life Wealth Partners. What is that and what services do you provide to your clients?
Evergreen Life Wealth Partners is essentially a sole proprietorship. I work with clients both with their insurance planning, investment planning, financial planning, and just generalized coaching around financial issues. It's a broad consulting type of practice that works in a few different areas based on my background.
A little note to the audience. This is not our first interview. We had recorded an interview at your offices in suburban DC back in late December 2019. But given the times we are in now, that previously recorded discussion doesn't really fit. And here's why. Back then, we had practically no unemployment. Stock market was doing very, very well. People's 401ks were doing very, very well. But as I said, that doesn't really fit right now. Let's instead consider the fact that people are suddenly feeling like their work or their business or both may not survive. So, Steve, let's talk about survival. What can people start doing now to unpack those issues in a proactive way so that they go beyond survival towards thriving? What are your thoughts?
Well, first off, Dan, you're describing the reality that we find ourselves in, right? And So on some level, part of the challenge with doing financial planning type work or insurance type work or investments type work is that at any one point in time, things can change like that. And so the reality is that more often than not, when people have a conversation with me or other folks in my space, usually there's something on their mind that is a current front of mind issue to them. What's changed between 3 months ago and today is that right now, everybody has the same thing front of mind, right? It's this COVID-19 situation, which is radically affecting the lives of a lot of people. It is ending some people's lives. It is surely impacting just about everybody, wherever they are in the economy. The question is, what do you do about it? And how does your particular situation both reflect, I would call it your values response, which is based on this circumstance, what's the first thing I should do? What's the next thing I should do? What's the thing after that? Essentially, the planning process, if you will, is always dealing with a certain degree of uncertainty. And so as of now, whereas 3 months ago, we could have a hypothetical conversation as to how people approach the planning and the future and wealth, and that sounds great. All of a sudden, we find ourselves in essentially an emergency circumstance, and you're asking about, okay, Steve, from a survival standpoint, what is it that people do? And my first response is, first off, don't panic. The reaction typically in a circumstance like this, I wouldn't blame somebody emotionally for saying, oh my gosh, I need to sell everything that I own. We need to retreat into a complete defensive posture, you know, sell everything, the sky is falling. And as an advisor or a coach, my first response would have to be, hold on a second. Is your house on fire right now? Is something happening today that is going to end life as you know it? And for the majority of the people, you know, in the United States, even in the world, that's just not the case, right? And so the most important thing to do at this point is to really respond with a sense of perspective, right? So when I sit down and I'm teaching, I teach a class, Economics of Personal Finance, at a local college. And so when we're talking about how do you frame financial decision-making, I use a survival analogy with the students. I say, how long could you survive without air? If something cut off your air supply right now, how long until you're out of the picture? And the answer is about 3 minutes. You can survive about 3 minutes without air. After that, game's over. If you were caught in a terrible storm, 3 hours being in freezing conditions or something totally inhospitable, and that could take you out. If you're without water, say, for 3 days, then game over. And then finally, you could probably survive 3 weeks reasonably without food. But after that, if you have no way to secure a food source, the game's over. So the question is, do you have an air supply problem? Do you have a shelter problem? Do you have a water problem? Or do you have a food problem? And for most people, if something happens right now, they might feel, oh my gosh, I need to react. I need to do something. I can't even breathe. They've got what I would call a cash or credit issue. If you go to the ATM and the ATM says, sorry, no cash available, you're going to look around and really start to get worried, because without enough cash or credit in the world that we live in, you're in some deep doo-doo. And so on some level, having an amount of cash and or credit that's available that at least lets you breathe is the first thing that you would need to secure. Second, for the shelter analogy, is appropriate insurance. I mean, do people feel safe? If something happened drastic that I don't have the funds available to fix, do I know that because of either insurance or other risk management strategies that I have in place that I'll be okay? So from a safety standpoint, that's what shelter would represent, and that's referring to insurance. The water analogy would be investments, longer term. Do I have the investments being made in myself and in markets to make sure that things will be okay longer term? And the food supply, in my analogy with the students, is this is planning. This is thinking about not just immediate, not just short term, but actually long term. What are all the components that have to work together in order for your plan to work in a time of uncertainty? And so I know that's a longer winded answer than you were probably looking for, but the first thing is to not panic, right? And understand that if you can address what's my cash and credit circumstance, how can I solidify that? Do I have appropriate insurance in place? Okay, that's solid. The investments that I'm making, maybe I can't afford to be as long-term oriented, or maybe my risk tolerance really isn't as aggressive as I thought it was. And what changes might I make to that picture? And then finally, given the nature of how things change over time, how can I manage uncertainty and take advantage of opportunities in this strange new environment? There are people that I'm speaking with who, the loss of life aside, they're ridiculously excited about opportunities that something like this represent. Warren Buffett is famously quoted as saying, when other people are fearful, that is actually the time to be greedy. And when other people get greedy, that's the time to be fearful. Right now, there is fear all over the place because we just don't know how to deal with the uncertainty of whether it's the policy response or the private sector, big business is going, what the heck, how is this going to affect all of our situation? So as an investor, as somebody who is perceiving what's going on, we're acting with incomplete information, whether it's political leadership, medical leadership, business leadership. A lot of people are sending mixed messages. And so your role is to say, what is it that I can control here? What do I really have to act on? And before I do something rash or something that could potentially be irreversible, let me think through, do I need another 14 packages of toilet paper to feel safe?
I've often felt that people in your line of work are unofficially doing psychotherapy. Which is to say, I'm glad that you have some clients that are really proactive and excited about this. I am too. But I can imagine that you still have some that are a tad freaked out. And you've got to, I hate using the metaphor, talk them off the ledge, so to speak. So how do you turn those examples of anxiety into actionable nuggets of information? Now, you talked about incomplete information. I am sure that and the fact that so many of us have cable news streaming 24/7, listening to positive diagnosis counts and the fact that all of a sudden our food supply chain is going to be disrupted because the meat processing plants in the Midwest have coronavirus outbreaks and people are like, "Ah!" So how, Steve, do you, you're laughing, but how do you use that moment of grief and anxiety and turn it into something positive? And I realize that's not your line of work, but I can imagine you're doing a lot of that right now.
Part of the reality is that, and I'm like a rock and roll guy, but you know, if I said to you, escape is never the safest plan, you'd say, oh, that makes some sense. And sometimes the best defense is a strong offense. That's sometimes true as well. But I think the idea of thinking through some of the what if and what happens when scenarios that you do as a planner prepare you for what happens when something like this comes down the pike, right? So if I've never had a conversation with a client about what a 30% market drop feels like, they are going to be shocked when it happens.
Right.
If instead we've had this conversation that says, let me take you through a scenario here. You open your statement one day and the numbers are reading 30% below the last time you opened your quarterly statement. How are you going to feel about that?
Right.
Well, I'm not going to feel good, right? And so part of my role at that point in time will have been to say that, ironically enough, is probably a good sign that there are opportunities. There are changes, there are fluctuations in what's going on. Let's talk about what might be driving that type of movement, okay? In the markets, we talk about something like this COVID situation as a black swan event, okay? Mm-hmm. It's something that nobody really saw coming. We didn't think it was something that could be priced into the marketplace. However, I have to tell you, the idea of some sort of pandemic impact or shock to the system is not new to people in decision-making positions, okay? The large companies in the world, they put risk mitigating steps in place for just these sorts of potentialities. I know that the government certainly does, and other aspects of our economy also do. And so the whole idea behind emergency funds or opportunity funds, it's designed to withstand certain shocks to your system. Your car that you drive around has shock absorbers for a reason. You don't know when you're going to hit the pothole. You don't know the size of the pothole. And it's entirely possible that the hole you hit could end your ride that day, right? But the fact is, there are a lot of aspects of uncertainty, a lot of challenges, a lot of things come up. And so I really feel that the message has to be, how do you keep perspective in times like this? Somebody comes to me with a question about, Steve, what should I do? It's like the market tanked X, and how should I respond to that? Or you know, I think in terms of real estate, all of a sudden my home value is 30% less than what I thought it was. And I would ask him, did your home just all of a sudden overnight become a third smaller? No, I still have the same amount of square footage. The lights are still on. I still have water. So how much did your circumstance really change with respect to your home or the value of the home to you? And the answer is, it didn't change at all. It only would have changed if for that point in time was your decision to sell that day. And so you kind of have to play through the scenarios of just how much of an impact does the current circumstance have on everything else, right? And truth be told, a lot of people I know are going a little stir crazy in their homes, but they're still doing their thing. The kids are learning virtually. They're learning something, right? They're learning the limits of their parents' patience is what's happening.
Right.
But at the same time, people are remarkably adaptable. Even though the physical distancing or the social, so-called social distancing is a reality, I've been signing off on emails with watch your six. So this is a military term that says, watch your back. So you keep 6 feet. But for me, I'm also thinking, who are six people that I can reach out to today that maybe I haven't spoken with in a while? So I'm doubling and tripling up on the social outreach.
What interests me about your line of work is that you've got enough to deal with in the trust of your clients to make sure that they have the financial resources to make choices. But it seems so frantic right now that I wonder if you have to kind of take 5 steps back to say, hey, Joe, how you doing? How you been? You been sleeping okay? And I'm wondering, what has been your perspective on that? Has it changed how you do your job?
It probably hasn't changed it very much, Dan. And here's the reason. Part of the privilege of being an advisory or kind of coaching spot is that you're not the one that's actually in the jar. You know, it's hard to read the label when you're the one in the jar. And right. If you're the client, you're the person going through an experience, as much as I might empathize with what you're going through, I'm not the one in that. And so there's always been a degree of, it's not too much distance, but it's enough distance to kind of keep perspective. And the difference between myself with having interviewed thousands of people and had hundreds and hundreds of clients who come to me with the same types of questions, the same types of issues, the same types of fears is that I've seen things, I've heard things, I've looked at how does this look like when I look at it a day at a time versus give it a month. And so the value of that perspective and being somewhat of a sounding board to people is remarkably valuable to them. And I'll tell you why in a nutshell is I think on some level, people tend to believe what they hear themselves say.
No doubt. No doubt. If I think it, it must be true.
There's a difference between thinking it and actually verbalizing it with someone else with whom you can have a dialogue. Because what happens is when we get into our heads, Dan, you're a thinking guy. You can read something and all of a sudden you're like, whoa. And it's real easy to kind of go off in a direction that, you know, things can escalate. But if you then said, you know what, let me take five and have a conversation with someone and you bounce an idea off and then they ask this question and that question. And it's like, oh, and all of a sudden, whatever it is that kind of went way out of control in my own head, because I had the opportunity to kind of bang it back and forth with someone, then it creates some context to whatever it is that I was thinking. And so your question about how do you deal with all this stuff? The answer is, just like anything else, a good counselor, more often than not, the most important thing they can do is shut up and listen. It's not my job to have answers ready for people. It's my job to have the right questions, maybe, right, or to help guide a process where I'm a huge believer in what I call value clarity. People get in trouble when their values are tested. where something happens that causes their values to be tested. But once they have an opportunity to brush up against that and say, who really am I and how do I think I should be responding in the circumstance or situation? And then all of a sudden, their level of confidence rises. Their creative capacity to come up with ways to deal with what seemed to have been a terrible circumstance, right? I mean, there are right now, there are businesses being created that a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, are going to be the story of the century. Do you know what types of businesses emerged as a result of the 2008 financial crisis? One of the largest companies in China, Alibaba, was kind of birthed out of that craziness of that time. And now look at that company. It's unbelievable.
You had a lot of sharing economy upstarts that have grown really, really large.
Absolutely. It kind of fits into that model. Capitalism has always been about problem solving at its core. Although competition is a condition of capitalism, it's really creativity and collaboration that drives its growth. We think of this idea that's like, oh, you know, I've got to compete. Well, yeah, there's always competition, but far more important than competition, in my view, is this idea of new creativity and opportunities to collaborate that really take things to the next level, if you will, in what we see in economies. You know, we've never had more resources than we do today. Like, there's never been as much creative capacity to solve problems than what we have right now. This is one virus. This is a small blip. When you look in the grand scheme of things, this is going to end up being a relatively small blip. I don't mean to minimize it in any way. People are going to lose their lives. People are going to lose their livelihoods. But I don't think our society has ever been more capable of helping people move through that with a sense of dignity and, frankly, with security. So the $1,200 stimulus checks, you'll probably end up getting more. They'll be a little bit bigger. But you know what? As we work through this circumstance, this is why, I mean, on some level, you know, I think this idea, what should I do with my stimulus check, right? Here's here's a question. Steve, what do you think I should do with my stimulus check? I would say if you're in that circumstance where I can't even breathe, like I'm not sure where my next pay, guess what? That stimulus check is for you. It's for you to spend on your family, food, put, you know what I mean? Something short-term that is going to help kind of staunch what is a current concern. Because you know what? If you can't breathe, that's it, right? Nothing else matters if you can't breathe. But for other people, Steve, I'm doing okay. You know, it's my 401k is down and crap, this is going to affect things, but it's not going to, I mean, I'm not going to be out on the street tomorrow. My perspective on what do you do with the stimulus check? You write that stimulus check and you give it to your favorite charity. Like yesterday, there are a lot of small businesses. And I would say that the same thing for some of the charities and the small businesses that are operating on shoestrings, figure out a way to get the money to those people, to those organizations.
I want to get back to that $1,200 check. We had a listener, Bobby, who asked about it. I would offer another solution. If you're thinking about a career and you like the idea of being a maker, maybe you invest in a cheap 3D printer and do some additive manufacturing. So 2 weeks ago, Steve, we had on Andrew Resnick, who works for America Makes, and that organization is involved in kind of drawing together the biggest and the smallest of additive manufacturers, companies as large as GE and perhaps as small as somebody working in their basement with a 3D printer making PPE for healthcare providers. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for people who say to themselves, well, if I can't be a restaurateur anymore, what could I be? Could I make something? I think if you look now, a lot of people want to use that nervous energy and turn it into proactive creativity. I think it's going to change the whole idea of supply chain. This idea of additive manufacturing will enable, let's say, well, we're seeing it with face shields. My local hospital has been waiting for months to get face shields from China. Let me go online, pull down the plans, and maybe I can make face shields. And people are doing that. Now, they're not going to make money at it, but it might be the spark of a completely new idea that they pursue as a long-term career opportunity. What are your thoughts on that?
You're going to see more and more of those stories taking place. There's an Austrian economist. His name was Joseph Schumpeter. And I believe it was in 1942 where he coined this phrase about creative destruction and aspects of how capitalism, by definition, works is that there's a creative process in the midst of a destructive process that takes mm-hmm. place. And so mm-hmm. this idea of being able to repurpose and renew, I think, and this is just an observation, but you know, there's a lot of talk about how many employees in the United States remain disengaged. The mm-hmm. statistics are somewhere on the order of 70% of employees right. find themselves disengaged. There's some gap between here's what I'm doing now and why I'm doing it, and here's what I could be doing, want to be doing, would be doing if I only, and name the whole list of what has to happen for that to take place. Now, you're describing, you know, people repurposing or additive technology. These are all potential aspects of what is capable and essentially lying latent in an economy like ours. There's never been more creative capacity or the capacity to be creative, okay, whether it's 3D printers or 10 other technologies which are available at the fingertips of a 12-year-old in front of a computer. Seriously.
Right.
And so the idea to say, you know what, maybe job A, B, or C is no longer going to be available, but D through Z are now a possibility. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's from a place of fear that says, you know, oh my gosh, what the heck am I going to do? And then, wow, I had no choice but to do X, right? And so if the COVID-19 situation circumstance that we find ourselves in is a prompt to maybe do something that I hadn't done before, then you know what? Take that opportunity. So I'm encouraged by just how people have responded, both in terms of caring for one another and the, you know, some of the things that are cropping up as ideas. People are going, hey, you know what? Maybe this is the right time to try this, to try something new. And so as the fear goes down, hopefully the response is people are going to be a little bit more emboldened, a little bit more courageous about what they'll attempt.
This has been a really interesting discussion. I have one other question that I wanted to ask you, and it came into my head while you were talking. And you do teach students at, I believe, University of DC, University District of Columbia.
Correct, correct.
So you were talking about value clarity, but a lot of your students, they're probably not there yet. They probably haven't even formed their values. What kinds of things are you seeing from them that are opportunities, but also things that they have to watch very carefully for so that as they are building wealth over a lifetime, they are asking, as you said, the right questions? What are your thoughts on that?
It's funny that you asked the question that way, Dan, because as a part of their semester, so, and by the way, this semester has been turned upside down, moving from a kind of hybrid in-class sessions to a complete virtual footing. The class is an economics of personal finance class. So when you think of economics, you think of, I am a part of something greater than myself, and we're in the business of time and money are scarce, right? How do you deal with that? With that level of scarcity, the personal aspect means that what some of these kids, some of these students have experienced has gotten them to where they are. Although their values may not be clarified, maybe they haven't had a ton of different experiences around money per se, but I think their sense of value clarity is pretty well honed even by the time they get to be, you know, seniors, first and second year students in college. And here's why. From what I understand, even by the time you're 7, certain experiences that you have in life really shape the kind of person that you're going to become. And our financial decisions are outgrowths of our experiences on some level. Mm. And so the challenge for the students, and the way I put this to them, is I made them come up with a 3-year kind of vision statement. Where do you see yourself? Mm. And I didn't want easy, milquetoast, ordinary, you know, I want to save some. I really want to know, like, what do you see as part of your future when you create this, this vision, a 3-year vision? And I want you to bring it back to a 3-month action plan. What can I do in the next 3 months that is going to support the 3-year vision that you have for yourself? Now, and I want you to be courageous about the vision. I know you're taking a risk putting something out there. You're just sharing this with me, but I want you to connect the things that you do and you have in your control over the next few months. Now, just as a result of that exercise, Dan, some mm-hmm. of the things that these students come up with are born from their experiences through their lifetime. Some of them amazing, good, some of them enormously challenging. But if you think to yourself, how does the exercise of doing this relate to resources, relate to money? And it's funny, when you look at most successful companies, it's not like they had money to manage, right? They had an idea, they had energy, they had to convert that idea and energy into becoming something that was not there before. So, you know, when I think if I'm thinking about financial planning, money management, it's not, what do I do with a bucket of money that's sitting in my basement? It's, how do I take an idea that's important to me, something that reflects my values, something that reflects what I see as a problem in the world? How can I go about both managing myself, my time, the resources that I do have access to? Who am I running with? Who am I spending time with? And so I had them kind of go through this exercise, and it was all part of this 3-year vision, 3-month action plan. Who do you need to reach out to? What do you need to learn? What do you need to read? How are you going to take the steps that are going to put you in a better position? And all of that flows into better financial decision-making, because it's at its core, it's driven by values.
That is terrific. Stephen Oriel. Steve, thank you so much for being on the Tightrope today. If one of our listeners or several of them wanted to go find you on social media, where would we point them?
Probably my LinkedIn would be the easiest spot to find me, and can kind of reach out to me there.
Very good. Well, I hope we can get you back on again.
Sounds great. It's been a pleasure, Dan. I appreciate what you're doing.
Links to Stephen Oriel's social media are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who walk the tightrope to seek and do meaningful work. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. Together, let's walk the tightrope to find and do meaningful work, for the future of work is meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.